Hello and welcome to a podcast from Food and Drink Federation Scotland. FDF Scotland is the membership body for Scotland's food and drink manufacturers. We represent and support our members on the issues that are important to them. I'm Joanne Burns, Reformulation for Health Manager at FDF Scotland. The Reformulation for Health programme is funded by the Scottish Government to support Scottish SME food manufacturers to reformulate commonly consumed products by reducing fat, salt or sugar and calories, enriching products with fibre and fruit and veg, and by replacing ingredients with healthier alternatives. This podcast is the next in the reformulation series, supporting food and drink industry to make their products healthier. Today, we will be discussing salt reduction solutions, and we'll be discussing the role of manufacturing, the current intake targets, the impact of consuming too much salt, as well as looking at how food manufacturers can decrease salt content and support consumers to meet the recommended intake targets. I'm delighted to be joined today by Sonia Pombo from Action and Salt. Welcome, Sonia.
Hello, thanks for having me.
We're also joined by two amazing Scottish businesses that are leading the way in salt reduction. So we have Greg Waters from Peacock Salts.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And we're also delighted to be joined by Keith Patterson from Shore Seaweed.
Good afternoon, good to be here.
Thank you. Now, so salt and sodium, what's the difference? And this is something that we are often asked. Salt is the chemical compound of sodium chloride, and sodium is simply one of the elements found within salt. To calculate the value of salt, you simply have to multiply sodium value by 2.5. Now, for all we're talking today about reducing salt and sodium actually is an essential component of our diet. The body cannot live without sodium, and we require small amounts of it to conduct nerve impulses, contract and relax our muscles, including our heart and blood vessels, and to maintain the proper balance of water and minerals across our body. But as we're all aware, people in general are consuming too much. And here to explain the dangers of overconsumption is Sonia from Action and Salt. Now, Sonia, as I said, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today. Do you mind explaining a little bit about your work and what it is you do?
Yeah, sure, no problem. So I work for a charity called Action on Salt. I'm by qualification, I'm a nutritionist. And the bulk of our work is looking around, trying to reach a consensus with both the food industry and the government to adopt this policy of reformulation, whereby we can reduce population salt intakes and improve public health all round. You mentioned quite nicely, you know, the fact that we do need a certain level of sodium, which we normally find in things like table salt, sodium chloride. We need that for our bodies to survive and to thrive, but we are all eating far more than what is actually needed, and that's putting our health at great risk of poor health outcomes.
Thanks, Sonia. Now, you mentioned there about kind of poor health outcomes and the risks of consuming excessive levels of salt. Do you mind going into that in a little bit more detail? What kind of things would people be experiencing if they'd consumed excessive salt?
Yeah, so it's. I should also make it clear, it's not like, you know, just eating too much salt in one particular day or in one particular meal. It's this gradual and excessive consumption throughout our lifetime of having too much salt that's typically found in all sorts of food. And that's putting quite a lot of strain on our blood vessels and our organs. It's been linked to all sorts of complications. For example, it increases the risk of things like kidney stones and kidney disease. It's also been shown to have links with increased risk of osteoporosis, because it kind of like leaches the calcium out of our bones. And it's also been linked to things like stomach cancer and to a certain extent to obesity. But the greatest evidence has linked it to increasing our raising our blood pressure, which is quite a difficult message to put across, because it's not really something that people measure on a regular basis, but is actually quite a common condition that we all seem to have. So having a high blood pressure puts us at increased risk of suffering from a stroke or a heart attack, and these are two of the biggest causes of death and illness in the world.
I think many people will be aware from public health campaigns and things like that that we should be aiming to consume no more than 6 grams of salt a day. But do you mind just kind of breaking down roughly for people listening where that salt's coming from in terms of kind of what we're adding at home or what we're buying and things?
Yes, so the recommendations that we have here in the UK are that we should eat no more than 6 grams of salt maximum per day. And that's mm-hmm. for adults, even less for children. And for those people, 6 grams may not sound like a lot, and it actually isn't. It's around one level teaspoon of salt, and that's total salt. So it's not just what we may perhaps be adding to our own food ourselves when we're cooking or seasoning at the table. This is all salt, including those that's already found in foods. And that's, I think, something that people don't necessarily realise, that in actual fact, a lot of our total salt intake is already added in the foods that we buy. In fact, about 75% is already added in. That could be anything, really. It could be from, you know, the kind of ready meals that you buy at supermarkets, down to like basic ingredients like bread and cheese, or the foods that you're you know, buying when you eat out in a restaurant or get a takeaway.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly why reformulation is really so important when we look at salt reduction, given that I think it might even be slightly higher than 75% now from recent studies, that that amount of salt is contained within the food that people are buying. So they've got no option to alter that. So that's why it's really down to the industry to be looking for some of these salt solutions to help take some of that kind of hidden salt away. Now, the industry itself, I think, has worked amazingly well over the last 20 or so years. I think it was about 2004 that the SACEN recommendations for 6 grams a day came into force. And since then, we've had 4 other voluntary salt reduction targets. And we obviously now have the new salt reduction targets that were issued in September 2020. Sonia, do you mind giving, if you're able, a brief overview of the new salt reduction targets and how they're slightly different from the previous ones?
Yeah, definitely. So as you've mentioned, this is now the 5th iteration of the targets. The first lot of salt targets was set in 2006. And it's a really comprehensive list of different food categories with, for the most part, they each have a sales weighted average and a maximum target for companies to work towards. So these targets are, the whole salt reduction programme is a voluntary programme, and it's a recommendation from the government for the food industry to work towards. And the way it works is that they have set these targets, and each iteration has gradual reductions in the amount of salt that they're requesting these food products have. So I think this latest set has around 84 specific food groups. So it's, as I mentioned, quite comprehensive. And it's had 8 new additional targets this time around. They include things like ready meals, popcorn, some snack foods in there as well, because we've seen a rise in snacking. So you've got some popcorn categories in there, flavoured nuts, some chili sauce and some dips, and as well as other condiments as well. So it's great to see this kind of these additional categories coming in, and that they're not reducing them or kind of broadening them. In fact, they're, you know, adding more and more products because they're seeing the kind of the contribution that they have in to population salt intakes. And they've seen for quite some time some of these categories have been kind of exempt from the targets thus far, and so you're now starting to see these differences between companies and food products that have had salt reduced gradually over time, these products that perhaps haven't had any work done to them as of yet.
Great to see the range of products that are contained within it. And I think a lot of people might be surprised as well that there's quite a few subcategories, or the whole kind of second section of the salt reduction targets, looking at food consumed outside the home, so kind of food to go, takeaways, things like that. I think looking at the food service side of salt reduction is obviously a whole different podcast in its own. Yeah. I think a lot of people would be quite surprised that it's not just food manufacturers that will be looking at these targets, but also the food service sector as well.
But for a long time, they were the out-of-home sector were left out of these salt targets in the first few iterations. And you could, you know, the rise in the eating out-of-home sector and the takeaways and stuff, you can't ignore that anymore. And you need to bring them in line with the progress that has been made by the food manufacturers.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, as well as the crucial role that salt plays in our bodies, it also performs a multitude of essential functional roles in food production. It can be required as a preservative to reduce the growth of organisms. It helps extend shelf life and prevent food spoilage, can assist in fermentation, as well as a variety of other functions, including taste and flavour and texture. Now, as such an important and integral ingredient, the thought of altering levels can sometimes seem quite daunting to food manufacturers. Now, Shore Seaweeds are a manufacturer of an amazing range of seaweed products, from everything from pestos and tapenades to seaweed-based snacks, including their snacking cluster and chips. And they were successful in acquiring funding to support reformulation of their chip products through our Reformulate Challenge Fund. Now, Keith, we touched on some of the functional properties there of salt in products. How have you found reformulating the salt in your products? And have you faced any challenges when you were doing that?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about us as a company, as a seaweed company, we provide a potential solution in terms of the seaweed we harvest. But we also experience this issue on the other side with some of our finished products or seaweed chips are a good issue with that. Because what we found in our category of seaweed chips is people want a snack for flavour. And the biggest issue with reformulation is it's very easy to take salt out of a product, take fat out of a product. But actually, you need to take your consumers in your journey with you.
Absolutely.
And the biggest challenge for us is, how do we make that improvement to our products? But in a category, especially snacking, all food is eaten for enjoyment to some degree, but particularly in snacking, how do we maintain the flavour profile? And we've looked at, you know, various things, from increasing the vegetable content in our product to reducing the salt content, and what balance of that brings us to an area where consumers will come in that journey with us, rather than some products that we've trialled in the past where the taste goes. So for us, it's all about doing this while maintaining the taste. And I think that's probably going to be a common factor across the food industry. It's great making changes, but you've got to bring consumers with you.
But can I ask you, when you started to consider reformulation, Keith, what was your main driver then? Was it from a kind of retailer request, or was it a company aim to look at the public health of your products or front of pack labelling? What was the main driver for you to consider reformulation?
When we first developed, and I'm going to stick to the chip products, we focused a lot on taste because we're introducing seaweed, something new, into the market, and we realised that people's first encounter with the product had to taste great. Mm-hmm. And then we positioned the product as a better for you product. And recently, you know, we've had the new HFSS, high fat, salt and sugar laws come in, and we noticed that our products very narrowly missed out, so we were on the wrong side of that boundary. And that was a trigger point for us to say, hang on, we want to be a really tasty but better for you snack. We should be the right side of that boundary. So that started the process. And then we looked at it and said, actually, we can get to the right side, we can be compliant, but is that enough? And actually, we've started looking at the salt reduction as a second stage to say, yeah, we can technically score on the right side of the HFSS, we make one small adjustment. But actually, if we bring salt reduction in as well, we feel that's the right thing to do to move our products on the journey of being better for you and within that category. So government legislation was the first point that kicked it off, but then we've taken it further since then.
And I think that really just shows that all businesses will have their own drivers for wanting to reduce sodium, as you say, from eating industry targets like the HFSS. And obviously that's something that's going to grow in the coming years in Scotland as any potential legislation for up here comes into force. Some people may want to look at front of pack labelling, maybe wanting to bring products from a red down into amber or green, or they might simply just want to improve the health of their recipes. What I would like to say to anyone listening as a Scottish food business, if they want any help or support in checking their products against the current range of industry targets, please get in contact with the Reformulation for Health team and we'll be able to assist you with that. Now, when considering reducing sodium in products, there's a wide variety of methods, each with their own pros and cons. Many businesses automatically think about reducing or replacing, but other techniques can help reduce sodium, including using other flavours to give the perception of saltiness or enhance the natural flavours, altering the distribution of salt crystals to change where the salt dissolves in your mouth, or even looking at different sizes of salt crystals in recipes. Now, as an industry, we often talk about gradual sodium reduction and health by stealth in terms of reformulation. And I think that can work very, very well in food service settings, as we were talking about with the salt targets. But that often comes with increased costs of product analysis and changes to labels and packaging each time you make a slight reduction for food manufacturers. And one of the most popular methods that we're now seeing is for sodium reduction is replacement. with Salt Alternatives, and I'm delighted to have Greg here from Peacock Salts. Now, Peacock Salt is based in the beautiful Eyre Coast and recently received funding from our Reformulate Challenge Fund to assist in their reformulation project. Greg, do you mind telling me a little bit about your business and your, most importantly, amazing new product?
Yes, indeed. So, as you said, we are based on the Ayrshire coast. I'm very lucky to look out of my office and see the sea, which is not so good in the winter, but in the summer is absolutely beautiful. So we are the UK's largest distributor of salt products. So we work across all sorts of different areas. So we do winter de-icing, we go into fish processing, water treatment, and of course food, which is a growing area for us. At the end of 2019, based on sort of conversations I think we'd had with our customers, as well as the changing guidelines, we decided that we would embark on a project to look at low sodium or reduced sodium alternatives. So to that end, we took on a graduate to help us work through the myriad different products that were available and then helping us through testing. So what we did is we did work through all sorts of products, including, you know, potassium, magnesium. We looked at some seaweed products, some malt extracts. And I think the key for us was always to find something that was of a reasonable cost, but also, I think most importantly for the food industry, didn't impact on either the taste or the texture of products. So after about 10 months worth of work in conjunction with University College Dublin, we came up with some blends that we decided that we would then take on to sensory testing.
And what were the main challenges that you faced then when you were developing that, Greg? Was there anything that stands out as a kind of challenge that you would want to give any advice on?
I think, you know, consider the agreement, the ingredients carefully in terms of where you'll end up with cost. There were some ingredients that we looked at that actually were quite promising, but were prohibitively expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I think talk to your customers and ask them actually what is it they're after.
Yeah.
And don't ever think it's a one size fits all, I think is probably the biggest thing that we learned. I think we sort of knew it at the beginning, but I think we learned it, how important that is as we went through the process.
Do you mind just letting us know in terms of kind of, if you're able to, in terms of kind of percentage sodium reduction, what is your new product kind of looking at compared to traditional salt for sodium?
Again, I think one of the things that we learned as we went through is that every customer is slightly different. So I think one of the things that we decided to do is that we will offer three blends basically off the shelf that will offer a 20, 30 and 40% reduction. But I think we strongly believe that most of the work will come with working the customers to their exact specification to find out what type of sodium reduction they want, but also what type of blend they want. So actually for most of our customers, it will be a bespoke offering.
Okay, and in terms of your kind of lower sodium range then, is that just a straight swap or would you imagine people using it in different ratios with their existing recipe?
Our understanding at the moment, and we are learning as we go along, but generally it seems to be a straight swap. But I think that will vary from customer to customer, depending whether they're, you know, in bakery or dairy, within the meat industry. I think it will be different for different products. So it may be, so we may have a customer, for example, who we deliver six or seven different blends into because they're making multiple products.
Yeah. And you mentioned a few different sectors of the food industry there. Are you finding that you're getting involvement across the food industry, or is there any specific sectors that you're working with more closely?
I think we sort of have very good links within the fish industry, fish processing, fish curing industry. So we've done quite a lot of work there. But actually one of the most pleasing things, I think, is the engagement that we're getting with, you know, small, medium and large customers across the industry. So I think, you know, fish and dairy seem to certainly be two areas where we're very engaged at an early point, but we are having, you know, people ready meals, pizzas, for example. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of interest there.
That's fantastic. I mean, you've ticked off quite a lot of the categories that Sonia mentioned earlier from the self reduction targets. But I might be interested just in probing a wee bit more there, Greg.
Yeah, of course, can you?
Maybe with yourself as well, Keith. In terms of health by stealth, I think some businesses deliberately choose to inform their customers that they're making changes. They might publicise it on their website or on their social media. They might want to make a front of pack health claim that there's a reduction in salt in the product. Is that something that you, I suppose more to yourself, Keith, is that something that you would aim to do to your consumers, or do you think you would rather just health by stealth?
Well, it's something we haven't made a final decision on yet. We're in the middle of our sort of process that we are doing consumer taste trials to see if the consumers can notice the difference between our existing product and our new product. And I think the outcome of that is going to be really intriguing. I think it does open up the messaging to consumers. You know, most of our consumers are buying snacks for enjoyment. But if you can say this product tastes fantastic, first of all, and then second of all, by the way, is lower in fat and lower in salt, that would be very welcome from consumers. So we haven't made a final decision on that yet, and a lot of it will come out from our research. But it does, in the sort of wider marketing tools that we've got, it will certainly play a role in it.
Yeah, and that's really interesting to hear. What about you, Greg, with businesses that you've been working with? Have you been finding that they're keen to promote their salt reduction, or are they doing it more stealthily?
A bit of a mixed bag, but certainly the end user doesn't always necessarily communicate their strategy to us. But certainly when they do talk to us, a lot of it is about reducing the salt and not making claims about it. I think it varies when you're talking to somebody who has a long established product, you know, that people are used to how it tastes, you know. So if you're a can of baked beans, you know, the core thing is about them tasting the same, you know, texturally being the same, and they might not want to make those claims. But it does seem very mixed depending on who we're talking to.
So as well as sodium alternatives, obviously Greg was touching on there, there's a wide variety of other innovative ingredients that can be helped to reduce sodium in products, from malts and yeasts and flavour enhancers to amazing Scottish seaweed. And obviously we have Keith on our podcast here, who not only is looking at reducing the salt in his chip snacks, but also as a seaweed producer. Now, Keith, do you mind just explaining a little bit to us about your seaweed and the health benefits of using seaweed?
Sure. Well, seaweed's one of the most nutritionally rich plants on the planet. And the Scottish waters offer a fantastic place for our natural seaweed to grow. The great thing about growing seaweed is it has got zero input. So in terms of environmentally, it doesn't require any fresh water, any land, feed or fertilisers. It can grow up to a centimetre a day. And it absorbs an incredible amount of nutrition from the ocean. Hence, it's very, very high in minerals. So when we talk about seaweed, we're really talking about an umbrella of lots of different plants, all with very, very different characteristics. It's a bit like talking about vegetables. So some you'll eat for flavour, they're very high in umami flavour, this fifth flavour that's known as yum. Some that are great, it's really nutrient dense, fantastic for you. And there are actually some species, when you dry them and you mill them into a powder, work very well as a salt replacement. Now, as a salt replacement, seaweed's very much on the sort of premium side of people looking for a natural, organic, plant-based solution. But it also delivers some enhanced benefits. So, you know, even a very small amount of seaweed, the equivalent you do as a salt replacement, would deliver your daily dose of iodine. Now, that's a nutrient. We're one of the few countries that don't iodize salt, as a matter of course. And iodine's a big issue in the UK and is only growing in terms of iodine deficiencies. The more we move to a plant-based diet, the less iodine we're getting from the sources of milk, fish, etc., where you find iodine. So we can actually offer a product here that helps replace salt, but also deliver iodine, fibre, antioxidants into the diet. So seaweed has a real unique benefit there. And we've done some trials in different product groups, and also in bakery, which is a section we sell into, where we've proven that seaweed actually can extend the shelf life of bakery products by 2 to 3 days.
Wow, that's
so
fantastic.
it's a really interesting ingredient, and I think we're only trying to really scratching the surface of what it can do at the moment. And as more and more research goes on, we're going to find more and more applications in this area.
So you touched there on bakery. Is there other kind of areas of the food industry that are exploring seaweed, or do you find in terms of the flavour of the seaweed products that bakeries best suited?
No, we advise essentially mixing seaweed in as 50-50% with salt. So right, seaweed, okay. The species we particularly sell as a salt replacement, so 1/10 the amount of sodium in it. So therefore you get quite a large reduction. But we don't necessarily say 100% seaweed, so it's that blend. And again, you know, in areas of processed meats, and also I think a really interesting area for salt replacement is in new vegan analogues of meat, where actually you've created a vegan product as an analogue for a burger or so, but actually often these products can be very high in salt, and seaweed provides a plant-based natural solution back into that product. So we're seeing more and more in terms of people looking at seaweed, not just in terms of salt replacement, but in terms of the wider sort of offer it makes in terms of putting it in food products. And certainly seaweed already is in stealthily a lot of food products you buy. Carrageenan is a thickener. So there's a lot of different areas where you can either showcase seaweed and show it off as part of your product, or add it by stealth, if you like, to give these sort of nutritional fortification and that salty flavour.
Can I ask, just for anyone listening who's interested, Keith, whereabouts in Scotland are you based? And in terms of your products, how seasonal is your seaweed harvesting? Is it a year-round manufacturing? Or
really good question. So we harvest all our seaweed from the very north coast of Scotland, around the Caithness-Wick area, around 40 kilometres of shoreline that we have licensed to harvest from. We do that because it's really the cleanest waters available, and a great sort of tidal exchange. It's the perfect environment for seaweed to grow. We do harvest all year round.
Okay.
Each species has a season, usually 3 to 4 months. So we harvest 10 different species, all of different functions.
Okay.
And that, because each species has a different season, it means we get to harvest all year round. And what we do when we harvest the seaweed is we drag it back to our factory, and then we air dry the seaweed. And seaweed is a lot of water in it. So, for example, if we get 100 kilos of seaweed, we might get 15 kilos of this incredibly nutrient-dense dried seaweed. But at that stage, it's shelf-stable, it's ambient, and we dry it, and then we sell it all year round. So it's, the harvesting is for each species is seasonal, but we can sell that species all year round once we have it dried. It's very shelf-stable, long shelf life product to that time.
That's fantastic. I'm still amazed at how quickly you were seeing some of the seaweed grows up to 1 centimetre a day. It must be.
And faster.
Yeah. Okay, well, now that we're kind of coming to the end of the podcast, I hope you agree that we've given quite a few different salt solutions to consider when people are thinking about salt reduction. But before we finish off, I don't know if you all want to give me just one final piece of advice or a top tip to food manufacturers listening who might be thinking about starting on a salt reduction journey. So I don't know, Sonia, if you want to jump in first there.
Oh, I have to go first, do I? I don't know. I mean, I applaud those who are looking to start the kind of salt reduction journey. You know, whilst it's a voluntary program now, there is no, like, you know, there's no real pressure from the government to do that. So the fact that you're doing it off your own backs, I think is really, really, really well done. So I guess maybe my one tip is to continue with that kind of reductions through stealth, unobtrusive reductions. Do it slowly but surely, just like Keith and Greg have been saying, you know, those gradual reductions to bring your consumers in line on the same journey with you so that they don't notice that difference in salt, because it can be done and it has been done.
Fantastic. And Greg, have you got any top tips for people listening?
I would say, you know, don't be scared of reducing sodium. I think people have a lot of fear of changing their recipes, that there's a, you know, the risk, you know, in terms of it doesn't work, consumer response. I would say, you know, talk to us or talk to somebody, test, try things, develop products. We can, you know, we're developing a scheme where we can help people test, we can support them through that. But I think, you know, the thing is, don't be scared of it. You can do it. And there are lots of people out there who will help you to do it as well.
Finally, Keith.
Yeah, Greg, I touched on one of the key things. Obviously, when you start, look at all the options, do your trials, but test it with your consumers. You know, that I think is the most important point. I think a lot of companies with existing products will be nervous, and test with your consumers as much as possible to make sure you've got the right solution.
Now, one thing I just want to highlight to people listening, in support of Salt Awareness Week, we are actually hosting a webinar on the 17th of March at 2 p.m. with input from a variety of industry experts, including Sonia, looking at salt reduction in food manufacturing, as well as exploring various ingredient alternatives to help reduce salt levels and help food manufacturers meet industry targets. For more information for the webinar, please visit www.fdfscotland.org.uk and keep an eye out on our social media for updates. Now, I hope that we've given you food for thought on how to reduce the sodium content of your recipes and alternative ingredient solutions like we've heard from Greg and from Keith. For food businesses within Scotland who are interested in starting a reformulation project, please get in touch with the Reformulation for Health team at reformulation@fdfscotland.org.uk. And thank you so much for the input from Sonia, Greg and Keith today, and for taking part and explaining more about their businesses and the opportunities that they have. And finally, just thank you to you for listening to this podcast from FDF Scotland. You can find out more about our work, and if you're a food and drink business, how to join us at www.fdfscotland.org.uk.